Real quick, let me tell you about a deal I just came across. Porkbun is offering .app, .dev, or .foo domain names for only $5 for the first year. Perfect for devs, web designers, and anyone in the tech industry to show off your latest project. Pay attention to this part. Every domain name at Porkbun comes with freebies like SSL certificates, Whois privacy, DNS, URL forwarding, and web and email hosting trials, all backed by incredible support 365 days a year. Get your .app, .dev, or .foo domain for just $5 right now at Porkbun. Check out the link in the show notes or go to codestory.co/porkbun today to learn more.
In the beginning, we actually had a discussion if we want to start with an MVP. We came to the conclusion that we'd want to start with an MIP, means minimum integratable product. Why don't we start with something that is even more basic, like just integrating with the customer environment and starting working with the data manually. So that was the first step we did. Just minimum we needed to get integrated, get the data, and start producing reports so we can get feedback before we even develop the detection engine. And that was amazing move for us. I am Alon Arvatz, co-founder and CEO of Point5, and the author of The Bubble for Your Computer.
This is Code Story, a podcast bringing you interviews with tech visionaries.
Like 6 months moonlighting.
There's nothing on the back end.
Who share what it takes to change an industry.
I don't exactly know what
to do next.
Took
many goes to get right.
Who built the teams that have their back.
The company is its people.
The teams help each other achieve.
Most proud of our team.
Keeping scalability top of mind.
All that infrastructure was a
pain. Yes, we've been fighting it as we grow.
Total waste of time. The stories you don't read in the headlines.
It's not an easy thing to achieve, mind
you. Took it off the shelf and dusted it off and tried it again.
To ride the ups and downs of the startup life.
You need to really want it.
It's not just about technology.
All this and more on Code Story. I'm your host, Noah Labpart. And today, how Alon Arvatz is helping you with your cloud cost bill by showing you how much efficiency matters.
This episode is sponsored by Kiteworks. Legacy managed file transfer tools lack proper security, putting sensitive data at risk. With Kiteworks MFT, companies can send automated or ad hoc files in a fully integrated, highly secure manner. The solution is FedRAMP moderate authorized by the Department of Defense and has been so since 2017. Step into the future of secure managed file transfer with Kiteworks. Visit kiteworks.com to get started. This episode is sponsored by ClearQuery. ClearQuery is the analytics for humans platform. With their full suite of features, you can go from data ingestion to automated insights seamlessly. With Ask ClearQuery, you can find valuable insights into your data using plain English. Don't miss the opportunity to simplify your data analytics with ClearQuery. Get started today at clearquery.io/codestory. Alon Arvatz has been in tech for a long time. Fun fact, he loved technology but hated computer science. After getting introduced to the industry by his father, he discovered that tech is not just computer science, which was a big relief. He is the author of a book called The Battle for Your Computer, which highlights Israel and the growth of the global cybersecurity industry. But outside of technology and cybersecurity, he's married with four kids and highlights that all things in life, family, startup, etc., is a partnership between he and his wife. Their family is a big fan of history and looks to learn the stories of the places they visit. Through his time in the military, Alon was exposed to the difficulties of managing cloud costs. Alongside his 15 years in cybersecurity and writing his book on the topic, he figured out that a focus on efficiency could help businesses with their cloud cost, starting with a minimum integratable product. This is the creation story of Point5.
Before Point5, I had almost 15 years in cybersecurity since my military service. And then I had a couple of more companies in cybersecurity, cyber school for cybersecurity training and education, and then Insights, my first cybersecurity startup and my first startup in general. And then Rapid7 after Insights was acquired, where I worked for a year plus. And for me, it was really clear that I'm continuing in cybersecurity. So actually, through my time at Rapid7, I also wrote a book about the Israeli cybersecurity industry. And for me, that was part of getting deeper into the industry and also telling its story outside. So cybersecurity was everything for me. Through my time at Rapid7, we got exposed to challenges around managing cloud costs in large scale. At Insights, we managed $1-2 million a year of cloud spend and cloud infrastructure. In Rapid7, it already became over $100 million a year, really different scale. And we noted that there are a lot of challenges, especially with anything related to engaging with engineers and with anything related to actually optimizing your infrastructure, like making changes to the infrastructure and driving it across a large scale organization was a huge, huge challenge that we identified. So at Insights, I had my co-founder Gal, and that was his hobby. Every few weeks, he would get into the cost dashboard and try to find ways to optimize. It was like nice to have because we really focused on growing the business, not on optimizing it. And suddenly for a big company, so there is a lot of focus on becoming and maintaining efficiency. And it's also very hard to drive action across a global distributed engineering team. So we realized there's a huge challenge there. And when we started meeting and investigating and researching and talking to multiple enterprise companies, we realized it's a really problem across the board. Over time, we got really passionate about this problem. One, we felt it's a big problem with a sizable market. Two, we get really related to that also from the values perspective. So really believe in frugality and efficiency and don't waste your money for no good reason. We really got connected to that also from the values perspective. And we got so passionate about it that we just decided to drop our cybersecurity experience and go chase an opportunity in helping organization optimizing their cloud cost. Now, we got so passionate about it that we actually left most of our holdback behind us. Usually when you sell your company, there is a certain like 20-30% of the payment is being left on holdback until you complete 1-3 years in the acquiring company working for them. So we actually dropped most of that because we got so excited and want to pursue this new opportunity.
Tell me about the MVP for Point 5, that first version of the product you built. How long did it take to build and what sort of tools were used to bring it to life?
In the beginning, we actually had a discussion if we want to start with an MVP. We came to the conclusion that we'd want to start with an MIP, means minimum integratable product. Why don't we start with something that is even more basic, like just integrating with the customer environment and starting working with the data manually? So that was the first step we did. Just minimum we needed to get integrated, get the data, and start producing reports so we can get feedback before we even develop the detection engine. And that was an amazing move for us because it allowed us to engage very quickly with the value we can produce and get very quick feedback. So Point 5 started with an MIP. Then that took us, by the way, something like 2 to 3 months. It's a fair amount of time for an MIP. And the reason that we also built a lot of infrastructure to serve us for the long term when it comes to integrating and processing the data. But after 2-3 months, we were already integrating with customers' environments and getting feedback on the value we produce. And then we headed to work on the MVP, and that took us like additional 2 months to get that out of the door. And after the MVP, by the way, we actually started running a few POCs, very limited, like not, you know, tens of POCs, handful of POCs with the first design partners. And actually it went very well, and most of them are now converting to full paying customers.
This episode is sponsored by CashFly. The web is a competitive place, and if your site delivers its content pixelated, slow, or not at all, well, then you lose. But that's where CashFly comes in. CashFly delivers rich media content up to 159% faster than other major CDNs. Through ultra-low latency streaming, lightning-fast gaming, and optimized mobile content, the company offers a variety of benefits. For over 20 years, CashFly has held a track record for high-performing, ultra-reliable content delivery. While competitors call themselves fast or use cute animal names, Only CashFly holds the record of being the fastest and serves customers like Adobe, the NFL, or Roblox, where content is created by users and must be delivered in real time. For the first time ever, Code Story listeners can get a 5 TB CDN for free. Yep, you heard that right, free. Learn more at cashfly.com/codestory. That's cachefly.com/codestory. This episode is sponsored by Kiteworks. Legacy managed file transfer tools are dated and lack the security that today's remote workforce demands. Companies that continue relying on outdated technology put their sensitive data at risk. And that's where Kiteworks comes in. Kiteworks MFT is absolutely the most secure MFT on the market today. It has been FedRAMP moderate authorized by the Department of Defense since 2017. Through FedRAMP, Kiteworks' level of security compliance provides a fast route to CMMC compliance, saving customers time, effort, and money. Kiteworks MFT makes it easy for users to send automated or ad hoc files via fully integrated shared folders and email. Administrators can manage policies in a unified console and create custom integrations using their API. Did we mention it's secure? The level of security with Kiteworks' solution is rare to find. Step into the future of secure managed file transfer with Kiteworks. Visit kiteworks.com to get started. That's kiteworks.com. So then you've got that MIP, right? You've got that first version of the product and you're getting that data, you're getting some traction. How did you progress the product from that point? How did you mature it? And I'm curious about how you went about building your roadmap and what criteria were you using to determine this is the next most important thing to build or to address with Point 5?
My personal perspective is that the most important thing when you drive these decisions is mapping out your ICP, your ideal customer profile. I can tell this is something that in insights we failed to do, or let's put it this way, we didn't do it in the best way possible. So at some point we lost direction from the ICP and we had to come back to our original ICP over time. This time when I started Point 5, it was very clear for me that from day one, I want the ICP to be very clear and make sure it drives our direction. So for example, at Point 5, we're second time founders, we have solid network, our investors made us tons of introductions, but the introductions were with different type of customers, when the main distinction is the size of the engineer organization. From day one, we decided that we want to focus mainly on enterprises, on big companies with very big engineering teams. So when we did these meetings and got these feedbacks from all these types of customers, we always reminded ourselves that we're targeting the bigger ones. So even if we got consistent feedback, but it came from a smaller organization, we always took it with a grain of salt. Okay, it's a good feedback, it's consistent, but wait, it's not for our ICP. That was guideline number one. Guideline number two is that we decide to focus on the areas that makes us different. So we didn't enter a blue ocean in the sense that before us, there were a lot of solutions aimed at helping you manage your cloud cost. On the other hand, our focus were very different. So first of all, we targeted mainly the engineer organization, not finance. We chase the platform engineering persona and FinOps people that sit within the platform engineering organization. And two, we did zoom in on the cost optimization piece of FinOps. So less helping you understand your cost and what you're spending on and more driving action across the engineering organization to become more cost efficient and optimize their infrastructure. So we had a very unique angle that when we talked to customers, it was very clear that it's unique. The first step in building the product was actually focusing on where we're unique, on giving more context to the engineer, help distribute different saving opportunities across the engineer organization, going a lot more deep technically because this is what engineers need. So build a thing that would makes us very unique and therefore more compelling for customers and organizations to test later on.
So I hear you saying we, and it makes me really curious about how you went about building your team. And what did you look for in those people to indicate that they were the winning horses to join you?
because we're doing it for the second time, so we have the privilege of having 40 people that worked with us in the past. We know them very well. We know what they're capable of, and building our first team around that. So the first people were people that worked with us in the last 6 years at Point 5 and now joined us for the beginning. On top of that, I'm looking for a few things with new team members. I'm looking for expertise and capabilities and where we're at. So from day one, we said we keep a high bar for anyone who joins the team to from expertise and talent perspective. So that's one. Two, it's very important for us to get people on board that are hungry. When you work in a startup, if you want to win and win big companies that develop products for years already, you have to be very hungry. When a customer asks for something, you're jumping on it and you just do it. And this is the kind of people that I'm looking for. These people that want to win, that want to be flexible, want to do the extra mile for their customers. And that's for me the most basic thing I look in people that I hire right now and also since the beginning. And the third piece, and that's more something that I would say is important for the long run and also for the experience now, but even more important for the long run, I think that like healthy culture of working as one team together is extremely important in building our company. And this is why when we're looking for people, we put emphasis on humility. That's the key to have a team that works together, that is always learning, because everyone is always open to get feedback and learn and improve. And that's the only way to create this healthy relationship and work together culture that we want to have in our company. So these are like top three things that I always look up in any candidate since the beginning, but also until today.
This episode is sponsored by CashFly. The web is a competitive place, and if your site delivers its content pixelated, slow, or not at all, well, then you lose. But that's where CashFly comes in. CashFly delivers rich media content up to 159% faster than other major CDNs. Through ultra-low latency streaming, lightning-fast gaming, and optimized mobile content, the company offers a variety of benefits. For over 20 years, CashFly has held a track record for high-performing, ultra-reliable content delivery. While competitors call themselves fast or use cute animal names, only CashFly holds the record of being the fastest and serves customers like Adobe, the NFL, or Roblox, where content is created by users and must be delivered in real time. For the first time ever, Code Story listeners can get a 5 terabyte CDN for free. Yep, you heard that right, free. Learn more at cashfly.com/codestory. That's cachefly.com/codestory. Hello, welcome to the Data Analytics Club. Do you know the password? No, didn't know there was one. Do you know how to code? No. Do you know how to query data? Like, ask a question? I guess not. I see. Then you can't be in this club. Sorry. Goodbye. Don't be left out of the Analytics Club. ClearQuery is the analytics for humans platform. With their full suite of features, you can go from data ingestion to automated insights seamlessly. ClearQuery provides you with the information you need without requiring you to do the heavy lifting. Their Ask ClearQuery feature allows you to ask questions in plain English, helping you find relationships and connections in your data that may have previously gone unnoticed. You can even visualize your data with presentation mode, taking your data storytelling to the next level. Pricing is based on storage, not licenses, and that ensures that you get the most bang for your buck. Don't miss the opportunity to simplify data analytics, your data analytics, with ClearQuery. Get started today at clearquery.io/codestory. So let's flip to scalability. And this will be interesting. Given, you know, the problem you're solving and how it relates to cloud, I'm curious about how you approach scale. Was it, you know, built to scale or with scale in mind from the very beginning? Or has there been any interesting areas where you've had to fight it as you've grown?
Essentially, you want to hit a certain balance that is always very hard to achieve. So you got to have both. So if you don't have both, so you're probably making the wrong decision. I can tell you that I think there is a lot of difference between first-time founders and second-time founders from that perspective. When we did insights, we didn't think about scale, honestly. Like, we figured everything as we go. One, we were very tight on cash. We raised $2 million. So we had to prove very fast that we have value so we can get to the next round. So we did whatever was necessary to close the first deal, and we dealt with scale over time. This time, one, because we had enough money in the bank to invest in scalable infrastructure, and two, because we suffered so much at Insights from not taking care of scale in the beginning that we came with some kind of trauma. We said, okay, this time let's do it a bit differently. Let's do it right and think about scale from the beginning. I think at point five, we changed like the balance more towards scalability. Like I said, it cannot be the main criteria because you have to close deals. You have to move fast. The market is not waiting for you. You also need to show your investors the success. You want to show your team that the market wants it, that you are able to sell. So you cannot also too much focus on scale. But we definitely move the balance at 0.5 more towards scalability and also more towards buy before build, which I see as a major part of scalability and probably the most cost effective way to get to scalability as a startup. So everything you can do, buy before build, do it. Anything you don't have to build, and it can get you ahead of the game without actually putting your engineers on that, just do it. So for example, all the support in single sign-on on our platform is something that we took an external vendor that does it for us. So we are a startup, but from day one, we have single sign-on, and that would serve us for the long run. But it also related to managed databases. So managed databases allow us to reach very high scalability very fast without investing in DevOps or in maintaining them over time. We always have scalability in mind. And I think that the most cost-effective way to become scalable as a startup without investing or wasting too much time on scalability is buy before build.
So Ilan, as you step out on the balcony and you look across all that you've built, what are you most proud of?
We start with my family. So this is obviously the thing that I'm proud of the most, and my kids. But from professional perspective, so obviously there is the exit of Insights. So like selling the company for $350 million is something I'm very proud of. But honestly, I'm a lot more proud in the scale that we brought Insights. So it's a lot less about selling the company and how much money I did or didn't do. That's not something that honestly that I take great pride in. What I take pride in is our ability to actually build a business that scaled up to over $30 million in ARR, creating jobs for over 200 people, then later on became part of Rapid7, but still, it's the same job. It doesn't matter if it's Insights of Rapid7. Actually going through all the struggles of building a business. So I come from Israel. I can tell that in Israel, there are a lot of companies that sell very early. But for me, I take pride in the journey that we've been through and the fact that we're able to actually build a big company. And that's something that I don't take for granted. Something that's always was very interesting to me and I got very curious about is entrepreneurs' motivation. Is it the money? Is it something else? I think that at some point in time, I reached conclusion that for me, it's never been about the money or the status or something like that. I just like to build and in a way progress the world, bring to the world something new, building it from scratch, making it happen, giving it birth. That's what excites me. And I think in a way, this is what led to my answer earlier. Because for me, the fact that I was able to build something in large scale is a lot more exciting than actually selling the company for X amount of dollars.
Ilan, let's flip the script a little bit. Tell me about a mistake you made, specifically with 0.5, and how you and your team responded to it.
There are so many. It's funny because when you start your second startup, you tell myself, okay, this time, there are going to be zero mistakes. I've done all of them already. So no way I'm having mistakes this time. And then you start your startup and you're doing a lot of mistakes. One of them that pops into my mind is around the POC process. So when you're an early stage startup, you want to get very fast to POCs and gets very fast to closing deals. I think one of the mistakes that I did this time is on the process before you start a POC with an enterprise. So usually it's a pretty lengthy process. You want to have in place NDA, you need to have in place security review. I think that one of the mistakes that we did was to actually make this process too long because we commented on NDAs, right? It's very simple, okay? We got NDAs, we sent it to the lawyers, they sent us back with red lines, and we sent it to the customer. And that took a lot of time. And at some point, we realized it's taking some time, and we stopped like commenting on NDAs unless it's critical. And we measured the differences, and we learned that just the fact that we didn't add red lines to an NDA saved us 1 month on the POC process with the customer. 1 month. This is crazy in startup life, 1 month. And if we're not putting any comments, any red lines, that's it, this month is cleared up. And that really created the process, a lot faster processes, and allowed us to land the first logos a lot faster. You know, you have to try things, you have to do A-B testing, you have to measure the results, and then decide what you want to do. And at our stage, it was obvious that we need to stop redlining and moving ahead with NDA, unless there is something really critical, and cutting this month off the POC process.
This will be fun. And I'm really curious about, you know, this for 0.5, for, you know, what you plan to do with the book and all that you see. What does the future look like for, you know, 0.5, the product, and for your team?
First of all, I can tell you that before we went for 0.5, something that we shook hands on as founders is that this time we want to build something big. And for me, it's not about doing or making more money. That's not the story. For me, it's about building something big, something impactful. And that was the idea when we built Insights. Also, when we looked for investors, we looked for investors that were willing to go with us for the long term. So the reason we went, for example, with Index Ventures as our leading investors was the fact that we felt they would go with us and support us for the long run. I think that the cloud cost management market is pretty big and will allow us to get pretty far, but we're also not disqualifying the option of going even beyond cloud cost in the future. So maybe one day when we feel that we get the most out of cloud cost, there are a lot more aspects of cloud management that are also interesting and relevant that we can expand there. We know that we want to nail cloud cost management very well. We know that we want to build something big. And if what's necessary is to expand to other areas or domains, we'll definitely do that.
Tell me a little bit more about the book and what the future is there.
I'm not an author, I'm an entrepreneur. If you'd ask me, I would tell you that first. But I can tell you that I always loved books, mainly nonfiction books. I always read, and I really believe in the influence that books have. Book would never get to virality or broad audience like, I don't know, a viral video on YouTube or social media. Never. But whoever would read the book, you have the opportunity to influence them tremendously. If a person decides to read your book and sit with that for I don't know how many hours and learn and get deeper, you have a really option to take a person from point A to point Z. That is always what really excited me about books. And actually, it was funny enough because the week I signed the agreement of selling Insights to Rapid7, I got a call from a friend of mine. And I was like, Alon, guess what? I just became the chief editor of a publishing house in Israel. What do you said about writing a book about cyber? Now, this person doesn't know anything about cyber, about cybersecurity. He barely knows anything about technology, or at least not too deeply. But he knew that cyber is a hot topic, and he looked for someone that can write about it. I'm the only cybersecurity guy he knew, so he reached out to me. And in the beginning, he took me more to an angle of writing about my personal experience as a cybersecurity entrepreneur, but I pulled it more towards talking and telling the story of the cybersecurity industry in Israel, because this industry has gone very far. Cybersecurity entrepreneurs in Israel have done amazing things in actually establishing a world-leading cybersecurity powerhouse. And I said that it's about time to tell this story. And I was always also very appreciative and cognizant of how this ecosystem that was built in Israel supported me as an entrepreneur. So the reputation they built over the years for Israel as a cybersecurity powerhouse, in many ways, that what allowed me to succeed with Point 5. So it was also an opportunity to write a book, which I always dreamed to do something like that and have this impact on people that sit down and read your book, but also a certain act of gratitude toward the industry and the ecosystem that brought me to where I am and all the entrepreneurs that supported me along the way. I'm very, by the way, bullish about the Israeli cybersecurity industry. I think it has a lot more ways to go. I think that a relative advantage that Israeli has when it comes to cybersecurity is very hard to replicate. I will say, however, that in the end of the day, cybersecurity market is not endless. It's limited. It cannot facilitate Israel growth of its tech sector for the long run. And this is why it is important to, over time, create more industries and more expertise in Israel. And this is part of the reason I'm proud and see it as a very important mission to also expand to other areas like cloud cost optimization, for example.
Okay, Ilan, who influences the way that you work? Name a person or many persons or something you look up to and why.
One entrepreneur that I really look up to is Miki Budai. He's a cybersecurity entrepreneur, but a pretty low profile, although he's done some pretty amazing stuff. And I think that Miki, for me, he represents the entrepreneur that is focused on doing, that is very humble, and he's able to bring like this humility and amazing execution and vision together and build amazing companies and do it in a very quiet way. So he's someone I look up to and I really respect. And I also make sure I talk to him once in a while to get his advice. I have to tell you who I try not to look up to, and not because they're not amazing, they're incredibly amazing, but because I feel it's less productive. People like Elon Musk, obviously, amazing entrepreneur, probably number one entrepreneur on the planet. But I feel that the thing that he's done are too like up there for me. So it's very hard for me like to learn from what he's done. I find it a lot more productive to look up to entrepreneurs that done things that are within the area of my domain, that are similar to what I've done, and learn from them rather than think about someone that is up there doing some crazy stuff that I probably won't do myself.
Okay, last question, Ilan. So you're getting on a plane and you're sitting next to a young entrepreneur who's built the next big thing. They're jazzed about it. They can't wait to show it off to the world and can't wait to show it off to you right there on the plane. What advice do you give that person, having gone down this road a bit several times?
Always focus on doing the next step very well. So I think that when you think about building a company, you think about customers and revenues, that's pretty scary thought, especially when you're a first timer, like you've never done it. It looks crazy how you can actually get there. And I feel that it creates actually this effect that actually prevents you from doing and becoming successful. I find a lot more productive focusing on the next step. Okay, what is the next step you need to do? You need as next step to land your first customer. Do whatever it takes to land this customer. That's it. Think less about scale. Think less about, okay, if I'm doing it right, but how will it work for 100 customers? No, don't be worried about that. Nail the next thing you have to do right on the best way possible and continue from there. When you get to a large scale, you can think about a large scale. The second tip would be, listen to your customers and what they have to say. Probably that would be the best guidance you would get. Because people think that entrepreneurship is about inventing things that doesn't exist. Create things that people haven't thought about. Inventing something that no one can imagine that they need, right? This is very often how we think about entrepreneurship. By the way, sometimes that's the case. But like I said, looking at the entrepreneurs that actually build something that no one thought can be relevant and no one thought that people would need, I think that's like maybe 0.1% of successful ventures. Vast majority is people that listened carefully to customers, heard their problems, were able to really fine-tune what is consistent, what is really painful, and just create a solution that solves it. That's it. So if you will listen to your customers, if you will follow what your customers have to say, you'll probably get to the where you want to get eventually.
That's fantastic advice. Well, Ilan, thank you for being on the show today. Thank you for telling the creation story of Point 5.
Thank you so much, Noah. It's been a real pleasure.
And this concludes another chapter of Code Story. Code Story is hosted and produced by Noah Labhart. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or the podcasting app of your choice. And when you get a chance, leave us a review. Both things help us out tremendously. And thanks again for listening.